Women's Soccer Review Podcast with Dwayne Rollins and Jonathan Tannenwald on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Welcome to the latest episode of the Sports Podcasting Network's Women's Soccer Review Show. I'm Jonathan Tannenwald from the Philadelphia Inquirer. Dwayne is otherwise occupied as we're doing this recording, so it's just me here in the Inquirer's newsroom in Philly with our producer, Kevin Laramie, who's up in Montreal. And we've got two guests on this show coming up later. Caitlin Murray, author of The National Team, the great book on the history of the U.S. women's program. And she writes for a bunch of other outlets as well. And to get things started, coming to us from a quite boisterous press room at Exploria Stadium down in Orlando, Kieran Tavem of The Athletic, who covers the England women's team and knows more about European women's soccer than almost anybody else I know. We're going to talk about the She Believes Cup a lot on this show, which kicks off Thursday night in Orlando with the USA, Spain, England, and Japan. Kieran and I have been friends for a long time, but we are rarely even close to being in the same place. And amazingly, we will be in the same place this weekend. We will both be at Red Bull Arena for the games up there on Sunday. Kieran, how's it down in Orlando?
Jonathan, a lovely introduction. It feels weird with you not being here in the press box or press area with me in Orlando, but certainly looking forward to seeing you this coming weekend at Red Bull Arena.
They do better air conditioning down there in Orlando than they do in Lyon, I believe.
Yeah, you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
So let's get right into it so that we don't take up too much of your time or of mine on a busy day in the soccer world. We're going to talk about England, Spain, and Japan in this part of the show. I'll talk about the U.S. with Caitlin later on. And let us start with England. And Kieran, I am going to get the hard question out of the way first, because I have to, and as you know, it's one that I have wanted to ask you for a long time. And it's about Phil Neville, who's got a very talented team with a lot of very good players. And they tied the U.S. last year at the She Believes Cup, and England went on to win the tournament, in quotes. And then they lost to the United States at the World Cup, although, as you wrote very eloquently with on your tactical analysis, it was a close game. The U.S. did win it. And I wonder this about Phil Neville. And I know England has had a couple of rough patches since the World Cup. They have all this talent, a lot of really interesting young players coming up who we'll discuss. But Kieran, allow me to ask, Phil Neville's a great talker, isn't he?
He's a very good talker, and he had some very good words ahead of the game against the United States. Look, I understand he's probably divided some opinion in the time that he's been in charge of England. I think his record is probably about par at the moment. I think reaching the semi-finals of the World Cup last year was, as I say, I think, again, probably about what we expected. England are not what you would describe as one of those top one, top two teams. The US is certainly a long way ahead at the moment, with a few others that have probably jumped over England in the last maybe 12 to 18 months. But look, he's done some good things as well. England have seen a lot of improvements off the field, and that's a lot, you know, in some ways down to him putting pressure on the FA. You know, he's managed to convince Dawn Scott to come over to England as well, which is a huge piece in terms of trying to improve the players and what they're doing off the field. But yes, he certainly likes to talk. He's backed up his words in certain matches, but he's certainly fallen short in some others.
Does he have to win something? And by something, you can make the case as to exactly what Team GB is going to be this summer in Tokyo. But does he have to win the Euros next year? If he's going to keep boasting, I mean, you know, I think about the Dutch, for example. And you've heard me say this a million times, as is of a lot of people, which is, when it comes to playing the United States, don't poke the bear. What did the Dutch do? They went out and they made this video thanking the U.S. for all the good things they did and then stonewalled them for an hour. And a bunch of the teams that try to poke the bear end up losing. So, you know, how much pressure is there on him, especially with the Euros in England next year?
Yeah, there's pressure. I don't think there's any denying that. They have to perform well next year. There's no excuses. You know, one of the things that he said towards the end of last year with some of the poor performances that England put in was, you know, I'm not looking at how well we play now. I'm looking at how well we play when those Euros arrive. So he's planning, he's preparing. This She Believes Cup will give him an opportunity to have a look at players that he wants to potentially see involved in that squad next year. He's brought some young players out here to the United States, the likes of Lauren Hemp, Grace Fisk, Alicia Russo. You know, they are players that maybe aren't necessarily, or certainly some of them certainly aren't ready now, but may well be ready come next year. But yeah, look, the fact that this is a tournament at home, the fact that Phil is so high profile and came into the women's game with no experience of having coached in women's football, means that there is extra attention and extra pressure on him to do well. So do they have to win next year? I don't necessarily think they have to win, but I think they need to try and better what they've been able to do in the past, and to better what they've done in the past means reaching the final.
Are they going to have to win that opener at Old Trafford in front of 70,000 people or whatever it's going
to
be?
Without a doubt, yeah. You have to start off that tournament well to keep that interest as much as anything. I think ultimately you want to start well for momentum purposes. You don't want to start the tournament off with a defeat. Because then all of a sudden you're playing catch up. But the biggest challenge, as well as gaining those 3 points, is gaining people's attention back at home. If England start off poorly, then all of a sudden you've got people who are enthusiastic with all the build up to the tournament, all of a sudden shutting down and switching off because they've seen England put in a poor performance or suffer a defeat. So yeah, they definitely need to win that game at Old Trafford. It's going to be a lot of people there. We're expecting, likely we would expect, to be close to a sellout, if not a sellout. So an important game to start well and to win.
Let's talk about the players. No Jodie Taylor dropped. A little surprising, although obviously she's been out of action club-wise because she plays in the NWSL. Lucy Bronze is injured, which might be news to folks just tuning in. You're not going to see her in this tournament. You're not going to see Beth Mead, who's a really good player, I think, too. And I don't just say that, Kieran, because she plays for Arsenal. I want to ask you about one England player in particular who I am very intrigued by, and that is Bethany England, who's been on fire for Chelsea, if my math is right, 21 goals in 25 games this season in all competitions. But there's a lot of competition at that forward spot. Nikita Paris, Tony Duggan, Ellen White. You and I have talked before, and you're not sure England's England for England, right? Isn't that the tabloid headline? You're not sure she's going to get on the field, though.
No, she will definitely get on the field in over the course of the tournament. I'm just not sure if she's going to start against the US. I think Phil Neville is probably going to go with experience. I think he will go with what he knows, despite Beth's incredible form. You rightly say, the goals that she scored, and not just the goals, but I think it's the way that she's really stepped up this season. There are big players and big personalities in the Chelsea team. Obviously, Sam Kerr joining just after Christmas will have, suggested to some people that Beth would have to take a back seat to Sam. But actually what she's done is she's actually taken that as, confidence and almost as an excuse to play even better. So I think she is, without question, England's most informed striker. We will definitely see her in the She Believes Cup. She may well be involved in some capacity against the United States. I would be amazed if she doesn't start one of the games against Japan and Spain. But my guess is that we will possibly see her off the bench against the US because Neville will want to go with the experience of Ellen White.
I'm looking forward to watching her. I'm very, very intrigued by a player who's doing that well in the WSL. Mm-hmm. I want to move on to Spain. Mm-hmm. And look, you've covered this tournament before. You know that the purpose is multifold. One is for the U.S. to play three really good games. Mm-hmm. One is for the other teams in the field to play really good games against each other. And the third is to sell some tickets and draw some attention. And Spain has risen to the level now where they are not only a good team, but they can sell some tickets and draw some attention. And I think that's a very good thing. What do you think?
Yeah, Spain are probably in that group of teams, in my view, that fall maybe below what you would describe as your elite. I think your elite are the likes of USA, England, France, Germany, Sweden. Spain are probably in that second group. But they have developed and are improving immensely. We saw them qualify last major tournament in 2013. They played in the Euros. They beat England in that Euros in what was a massive, massive catastrophe for England, being knocked out in the group stages. We then saw them qualify for their first World Cup in 2015. And they've kind of gone from strength to strength. And if you look at the makeup of the squad, it's made up largely of players from Barcelona and Atletico Madrid, and they're the two teams that are heavily investing in their squads in the Spanish league, and the two teams that progress furthest into the Women's Champions League. We saw Barcelona reach the final. It was their first final last year. Yes, they were well and truly comprehensively beaten by Lyon, but those two clubs are investing in their women's teams, and that's ultimately benefiting the national team. So they play really nice football, really heavily based on possession, sometimes to the point of frustration, because you see them pass sideways to sideways, but they are getting better and the end product is getting better. So they're an exciting team to watch, and I'm really interested to see how they do in this tournament.
Certainly the storyline for the US fans is that it's their first meeting since the World Cup last year, mm-hmm. when Spain gave really the biggest scare to the U.S. of any of the teams the U.S. played on the way to winning the title. I think people here, they know the name Jenny Hermoso. I mean, they saw her last summer, but also she's made a name for herself in women's soccer circles. They might not know Alexia Putellas yet, and I would venture, Kieran, because you cover a lot of European women's football and have for a long time. That's a name that people need to know and know pretty soon.
Yeah, do you know what? I tweeted it out when Spain announced their squad. I think you could pick any one of the midfielders that have been named in the She Believes Cup squad. Angela Sosa for Atletico Madrid, I don't think from memory went to the World Cup, but she's been phenomenal probably for the last couple of years for Atletico. You rightly say Alexia Putellas, absolutely phenomenal. I really like Patty Guerrero from Barcelona. Seen her in some of the youth tournaments for Spain, and she is technically very, very good in the midfield for Spain and for her club Barcelona. I think Guerrero, Putellas, Amanda San Pedro, another one. They're gifted in midfield. They have an abundance of talent. You mentioned Jenny Hermoso up front. It's probably the one area where they're maybe a little bit short. If Hermoso doesn't play well, then sometimes Spain struggle for goals, but there is no shortage of talent in that midfield, and that sometimes can be what gives opposition players and opposition teams the biggest problem.
So to Japan now, and Saki Kumagai is the big name, and she plays for Lyon. A lot of people know about her. A few people who followed European women's football over the years will know the name Mana Iwabuchi. A handful of people at Red Bull Arena will know the name Yuka Momiki, because she was born in New York, of all places. And look, we've known for a while that this Japanese program is aiming toward the Olympics this summer, which they're hosting in Tokyo. When you take a look at this team, it's not quite fair to say they've flown under the radar, but maybe they have some, because Australia has the star power and Sam Kerr and so on, and Japan, got to the game against the Netherlands, and they had a really tough and controversial loss. But this is the time when this team is supposed to be peaking, and what do you think we're going to see from
them? Yeah, I think we could see absolute brilliance, or as we saw in the She Believes Cup last year, absolute disaster. I think Japan showed in the World Cup that they have huge potential. I don't think anyone really expected them to win. No one really expected them to go deep, but that game that they had in the knockout rounds against the Netherlands when they were knocked out was one of the best games of the tournament. And you're right, I think everything has been geared towards this Olympics. Obviously, they're hosts, the expectation will be quite high on them. The problem that we have is that obviously in hosting the Olympics, they didn't have to go through, or don't have to go through, Olympic qualifiers. Obviously, they are ongoing at the moment. There will be another team joining them, another two teams joining them. We don't know how they're going to perform, because we haven't had the opportunity to see them in these Asian qualifiers. But look, if they perform to their peak, then there is absolutely no denying that this Japan team could challenge for a medal. Whether it's gold or not is another question, but certainly there is a chance of a medal.
So you're in Orlando, you're going to see USA England, which is obviously the big game tomorrow night for both the countries that we hail from. I think that Spain-Japan game is going to be fascinating.
very technical, isn't it? You know, we're used to seeing certain games where transition plays the biggest part in the overall kind of style of the match. There is no denying that this is going to be who can keep the ball better, because both of them like to do it. How are you going to win that ball back? How are you going to press the opposition? How are you going to force that mistake and that error? Because both of these teams are, I would probably say, the two best teams in the world at keeping the ball. The two best teams in the world at making opposition players look quite foolish, because they can just knock it around you, and before you know it, they're in the final third of the field. So I'm with you, mate. It may be the one that, for some, is less exciting, because England and USA, let's be frank, are probably seen as the two, I say two bigger teams, but that's disrespectful to Japan, because they've obviously won a World Cup. But I think Japan-Spain is one of the, and maybe along with England-Spain, is probably the two low-key matches of the tournament. Anything not involving the USA is obviously going to be seen as lower key. But I'm really excited about Japan-Spain. I think that, that one could be, you know, really interesting to watch because of the technical side of the game and the technical ability that both teams have.
What's the buzz like in Orlando around this? Because we know that the ticket sales have not been as strong as they have been in New York and in Dallas, which is where the tournament will go after this. And look, when the U.S. women come to New York, it's a rock concert. It has been for years when this happens. This is going to be the fifth time in 6 years that they've played at Red Bull Arena, and they've sold a lot of them out, sold all of them out, just to be clear. And I think Dallas is going to be close to a sellout, too, but we've heard that Orlando is not. Is there any, you know, buzz marketing, whatever, going on down there to get the word out?
I must confess, I only landed 24 hours ago from the time that we're recording. I must confess, in that time, I haven't seen a huge amount. I think also how much buzz and grind game day, and I'm sure there will be more, but I can tell you that I'm sat at the back of the press conference room, and there are more England media than there are US media that have attended today's press conference. So I think that tells you a little bit of, I think the game in New Jersey will have more attention, as you say. You know, the games there always do very well. A lot of you guys are local to New York, whether it's offices based there or for someone like yourself, it's a short journey over. But the fact that there are more English journalists in Orlando at this press conference, as I say, I don't know what it will be like on game day, but more English journalists than American, probably gives you an idea of maybe not as much buzz here as there might be in the other two games that we see.
It doesn't happen very often that the US media are outnumbered, as you know well.
I do.
I'm going to break some news while I'm on the line with you here. Reign FC, OL Reign, or whatever the heck we're supposed to call them, have just announced that Rumi Utsugi and Lydia Williams will not be returning to the club. That's
interesting. Lydia Williams doesn't surprise me. If I'm being totally honest, I think they have, in my view, and I've been very vocal about this on social media, I think they have one of the best goalkeepers in the world in Casey Murphy, or certainly a goalkeeper that can become one of the best goalkeepers in the world. I think when they managed to snap her up and get her from Montpellier, I looked at that and I thought, yeah, do you know what? You've done really well there. I think she's phenomenal. And obviously they have Michelle Batos on the roster as well still, who is more than capable of stepping into those shoes if Casey is not available. Or actually, do you know what? Based on her performances at, you know, during the NWSL, why not have Batos as your first choice? But for me, Casey Murphy is one of the best goalkeepers around, and it was always going to be very difficult for Lydia Williams. Rumi Utsugi, you speak to someone like Jess Fishlock, rates Rumi incredibly highly. That one probably surprises me a little bit more than Lydia Williams.
So I want to close out with you, Kieran, by asking about another tournament going on at the moment. There's a few of them actually going on around the world at the moment.
Yeah.
The Algarve Cup, She Believes, and one that I'm very intrigued by, which is the Tournoi de France that France is hosting with Canada, the Netherlands, and Brazil. That is a stacked field. And talk about the first day of results in a moment. But first of all, how good is it that the French Federation is finding that it's good and maybe even profitable to do something like this?
Yeah, it's good. I think ultimately we want to see these teams get as many internationals under their belt, and more importantly, as many internationals against fellow top teams. That's a really interesting tournament for me. And if I wasn't at the She Believes Cup, that is probably where I would have gone, because you have four very, very strong sides. You have the European champions who are phenomenal at home in front of their home crowd. We saw them perform really, really well at the World Cup last year. Brazil under Pierre Sundhage are definitely improving as well. They came over to England in the autumn and managed to beat the Lionesses. And Canada are a team you never really know what you're going to get. I think they have all the talent, but I just sometimes think that they hugely underperform. And I think speaking to our mutual friend Haar earlier on today, I think that they are a team in certain parts of the field where they're aging and are slowing up a little bit. So they're relying on those young players to come through, and we're just waiting for them, you know, the likes of Jesse Fleming, Jordan Huitema, we're waiting for them to really kind of grab the games by the scruff of the neck and maybe see some of these older players that are slowing up, maybe, you know, not forced into retirement because that's a little bit disrespectful, but maybe not relied on as much. You know, for me, that tournament is a really good one to keep an eye on, and hopefully it will continue on.
Well, before Kevin pulls the plug, since he's up in Montreal, let me note the scores of the games on Wednesday. The first set of games, France won, Canada nothing, which is close. Let's see here. Christine Sinclair and Jordan Huitema started up top for Canada. Marie-Antoinette Katoto, who did not go to the World Cup last year, as folks know, and that was a pretty big deal at the time, started up front with Katie Diatidiani, who, as we know, might be coming to Portland. Stay tuned. Mm-hmm. Yep. And Delphine Castorino came off the bench. Viviana Say scored the only goal of the game in the 55th minute. It was a lovely free kick that she scored. And the game that intrigues me, Kieran, Netherlands 0, Brazil 0. 11-6 the shots for the Dutch. They did not score, and everybody was playing. And you do wonder if maybe Pierre Sundhage is starting to work her magic.
Yep. As I said a couple of minutes ago, I think Pierre is already working a magic in Brazil, and they were very, very good when they came over to England. Surprised us all, if we're honest, because if we're being completely frank, Brazil were at times not very good at that World Cup last year, and they were in horrible form going into it. I think they'd had 9 defeats in a row going into the World Cup under Vidal, and it was amazing that he had had a job going into the World Cup. But Pierre was a huge get for them. With the experience that she's got and the teams that she's managed. So, you know, we want Brazil to do well. We want Brazil to be competing with the very best. You know, the men's team has taken all the plaudits for years and years and years, and on some occasions, rightly so, for some of the amazing men's sides that we've seen. But when you've got a player like Marta and you know, players like Cristiani and Formiga, you know, these are players that have represented that country, you know, with real class. And they've never really had the right people around them to be successful. Now they have a really good coach, and hopefully we will see them perform well over the next 2 to 3 years.
Well, the She Believes Cup is on the ESPN family of channels here in the United States and on TUDN in Spanish. The Tournoi de France is on beIN Sports in the United States because they have the international contract for the French women's national team. And Kieran, I will see you Saturday up at Red Bull Arena.
Look forward to it.
And that is Kieran Tavem of The Athletic. He also has a book out, co-authored with Jeff Kasouf of Equalizer Soccer, about the history of the World Cup. You can find the book and Caitlin's book in all the major online shops, and even maybe a few of the independent ones out there in wherever you are locally, that you might want to go support your local bookstore. Kieran, thanks again, and we will take a break and come back in a few moments with Caitlin Murray. Welcome back to the Women's Soccer Review here on the Sports Podcasting Network. I'm Jonathan Tannenwald of the Philadelphia Inquirer, flying solo in the captain's seat today with behind me Kevin Laramie, our producer up in Montreal, and our guest in this segment is Caitlin Murray out in Portland, Oregon. She writes for a bunch of places, as you all have probably seen. She's also the author of one of the really great all-time books on American soccer that you will find. It's called The National Team. It is a history of the U.S. women's program going back a long time, and it details really well the players' fight over many decades for better treatment for equality, of course, with money. There's a lot of that, but also, obviously, their wins on the field as well as off the field. And there's some really great stories in there, and it's very well written. If I say too many nice things about Caitlin, she's going to get annoyed with me, so I will stop and say, hi, Caitlin. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Hi. Thanks for having me, Jonathan.
We are going to discuss the U.S. team in this segment as they get ready for the She Believes Cup. Of course, I will be up at Red Bull Arena on Saturday and Sunday to cover their arrival in what is one of the great bastions of support for the team. And Caitlin and I have done a lot of traveling to watch this team over the years. We were both at the World Cup in France last summer. We were both at the World Cup in 2015 together. Kevin, you might like to know that we were seated next to each other by fluke in the press box at Olympic Stadium for the U.S.-Germany semifinal back in the day, and it's a long way down from up there from where we were is all I'm going to say. Let's talk about this U.S. team.
We were not given top billing for the seating chart.
No, we were not.
It's okay. I remember my internet didn't work. There were a lot of issues, but, you know, I think we've talked about this. We'll never forget the sound when Celia Sausage missed her PK. It was as if the U.S. had just won the World Cup. So that was a pretty cool moment.
It was amazing. And I remember looking at the TV monitor and seeing Sylvia Nye, the Germany coach at the time, just staring 1,000 miles off in the distance. Let's talk about the present day for a few minutes here. In this U.S. team, which there are 23 players on this U.S. roster. At some point here, Vlatko Ananovsky is going to cut it down to 18 for the Olympics. And we assume that the 18, and he gets four alternates too, are going to come from this 23. And I wonder, who some of the players are in this bunch who you think, you know, I don't want to say have a point to prove because we know they're all really good. But somebody's going to get cut, so somebody, you know, you think is going to use this to make a point. Who's somebody you're watching?
Yeah, I mean, this is the opportunity, I think, to state a case because, look, they went through Olympic qualifying. Those are games that count, but they weren't against very good teams. So I think most of the players tended to look pretty good in Olympic qualifying. You know, I'm not sure that maybe Jessica McDonald did enough. So she was sort of a player who I think if she really wants to get back for the Olympics after being on the World Cup roster, she's got to play well. She's one of the players I'm kind of looking at as maybe a cut. But I think that Lynn Williams has really been playing like she has something to prove. Like she is really trying to state her case. I mean, she was relentless in Olympic qualifying and worked so hard. And I think that when you look at the depth that the U.S. has in the attack, it's going to be tough for her. And I think that if I were to put money on it right now, I'm not putting Lynn Williams on the roster for the Olympics. But she's a player who's going to be playing like she has something to prove. I think, obviously, Casey Short, I mean, after being called into every national team camp for about 2 years, getting cut right before the World Cup. Now she's sort of back in the team, and we're all sort of wondering if this is going to finally be her payoff, if she's going to make the Olympic roster, or if it's going to end the same way it did before. So I think there are a lot of players sort of in the mix, but if I had to put money on it right now, I'm looking at pretty much the World Cup roster with maybe one or two changes at this point.
Well, I'm going to assume you're betting somebody else's money, so I'm going to ask you for the biggest gamble of all, which is, of course, we haven't mentioned Alex Morgan yet. She's not here.
Yeah.
And I won't bet against her, only because I've covered her for a long time, as of you. You know.
Yeah, we know about her.
Not like we've heard much, but, you know, that's got to be part of this equation too, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's sort of the toughest question to answer because I have never had a child before, but from what I have heard from other soccer players who have come back from that, it's sort of different for everyone. Everyone has their own timeline, their own experience. We have seen players come back pretty quickly. I mean, Sydney LaRue was back playing for the Pride pretty quickly. Kate Markgraf came back from having twins and, you know, was playing really well. And then that's actually one of the stories I tell in my book. And, you know, she just sort of was like, I'm done with this. I'm going to retire. So, I mean, players come back from pregnancy all the time. It's just a question of how quickly she can do it. Because, I mean, it is a pretty tight timeline. But you look at a player like Amy Rodriguez, she, after she had her first child, I think she came back and was the best version of Amy Rodriguez maybe we had ever seen. I thought she was maybe an underrated but important player in the 2015 World Cup when the U.S. won. So, you know, this is a wait and see thing, but we can't rule it out. And until you can rule it out, like, Alex Morgan has to be in the discussion. We've seen all the videos of her training while pregnant and looking, you know, pretty sharp. It's not like you lose being a really great soccer player just because you're pregnant. So we'll have to see what happens, but we can't rule it out.
And I'm certainly not an expert in the subject, and I'm not even going to try to be. But that said, and I don't claim to know Alex as well as other people do who cover this team, but if anybody would have this thing planned out down to the inch of what it's going to take to get back, it's her.
Yeah, she's incredibly competitive. And because this has been done so many times before, I think there's a blueprint. She's probably talked to Sydney Leroux and Chrissy Rampone, and like she's probably gotten advice from these players, and I'm sure it's all mapped out. I heard very quickly when her pregnancy was announced, I was hearing from people close to her that she plans on getting back. Like, this was always in her mind from the beginning. So I would assume she's, you know, approaching it that way and has a very clear plan for how she's going to do that.
What do you make of Mallory Pugh's situation? Look, I think it's possible that she goes to the Olympics. And I think it is honestly, and I don't know that I would have said that said this a year ago, but I think I'd say it now. I think it's possible she doesn't go.
Yeah, I mean, she was left off the Olympic qualifying roster, and I do think that, like, she wasn't in great form. You know, when she broke into the team when she was 17, I think everyone was looking at, you know, the way she played and saying, wow, this kid is the future of the team. She's incredible. And then at some point, she started to plateau a little bit, and she wasn't as effective, and you know, she wasn't in great form. And I think there's a reason she didn't play very much during the World Cup, and she wasn't really a factor. But at the same time, I wonder how much of her being left off the roster entirely, even though, I mean, she was there, she was training with the team, but she was not on the roster. And I wonder how much of that was just Flacco choosing to send a message to her. I don't know if that means that Flacco thinks that she is not a player he wants at the Olympics or a player that's good enough. I wonder if it's sort of like, hey, you're a good player, but I want to send a message to you that, like, spots are not guaranteed, so you need to step it up a little bit. Because she has been a little inconsistent, and, you know, maybe it's Blacko thinking she got complacent. You know, we don't know exactly what it was. I don't think it's inconceivable that he still very much sees her as part of his plans, and that was more of a strategic thing to sort of wake her up a little bit. It could very well be that he just thinks that maybe, you know, she's not going to be a factor for the team going forward. I do think that when you look at the other players that the U.S. has ahead of her, they've been better. I mean, I don't think there's any way to sugarcoat it. And it's a little concerning. You look, you know, Megan Rapinoe is, I don't have it in front of me, I think she's like 34. This is an aging attack. So they need a player like Mallory Pugh who is going to step up and sort of carry this team into the future. And we don't really have that. There's a reason why the U.S. was the oldest team at the World Cup. The older players are still the best players on this team. So, I don't know. I mean, what do you make of the situation?
Oh, I'm going to tip my hand to the listeners a little bit. I'm writing a column for this weekend about how old this U.S. team is and what it might mean going forward. I think that Ananovsky absolutely was sending a message to Pugh to say, hey, you just got traded to Sky Blue. You've got a chance to put your mark down you know, in a big way on a team where she's going to be one of the big stars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they've just moved to Red Bull Arena, and Pugh's going to be one of the players that sells tickets. And she's going to be playing off Carly Lloyd, and you figure that if there's anybody you can rack up a bunch of assists feeding, it's Carly Lloyd. And yeah. I look at the NWSL schedule, I look at what Sky Blue's got, and if I don't know this, maybe you do, it sort of makes sense to me that the U.S. players are going to leave for training camp at the end of June, around then. So that's 10 games in the NWSL. Can she get 5 or 6 assists in those 10 games and really make her mark? I think it's possible, and I think that's the kind of message that Vlatko would want to send.
Yeah, I think it's clear that the Washington spirit wasn't really working out for her that well. I mean, there are a lot of other issues, which we can get into, you know, another time. That's probably for another podcast. I don't know if that was really the right situation for her. I think a change of scenery could be very helpful. And, you know, people sort of maybe tease Carly Lloyd a little bit for, you know, being a little robotic and obsessed with working hard. But I think that being in that sort of environment could be a good thing for Mallory Pugh to maybe learn a little bit about what it takes to kind of get to that next level. Because, you know, she was at the 2016 Olympics. She was fine. But I think, like I said, she has plateaued. She needs to sort of step it up a little bit. So I think a change of scenery, different staff, different players around her, it could be a good situation for her. And this is a chance for her to sort of regenerate and refresh a little bit.
One other player I want to ask you about, somebody who I've watched for a while, and I know you have too, is Andy Sullivan, who, as soon as, you know, the U.S. World Cup team got home from France and everybody started making lists of who's the player who didn't go to the World Cup who might go to the Olympics. Obviously, Casey Short was on it. Yeah. But Andy Sullivan was on a lot of those lists too. And she's really good. And she's, even now, sort of only starting to come into her own. It's clear that Vlatko Ananovski thinks very highly of her, correctly, I would say. She's still in the running. She's on the She Believes Cup team. And I wouldn't rule her out. I don't know that I'd rule her in, but I wouldn't rule her out.
Yeah, I think the thing is, I don't know what she brings to the midfield that the U.S. doesn't already have when you look at Julie Ertz, Lindsey Horan, Rose Lavelle, Samantha Buess. I don't know if there's something that Andy Sullivan can bring that is going to be better or different than the players that they have. I sort of, when I look at the Olympic roster, yes, it's the quality of the players and the form that they're in. It's only an 18-player roster. 2 of those are goalkeepers, so there's only 16 field spots. And one question I have that's sort of unanswerable at this point is, what is the configuration of that roster going to be in terms of how many defenders, midfielders, and forwards? Because for the World Cup, I was a little surprised that Jessica McDonald even made the team. Like, why did they need as many forwards as they had? So I don't know how Vlatko is going to approach this roster construction. If he thinks they need 5 midfielders, then yes, I think Andy Sullivan is obviously a choice to get in there. I just don't know that that's going to happen. I think you have defenders like Crystal Dunn and Kelly O'Hara, who are utility players. Yes, they're fullbacks. They could also play as wingers, forwards. I mean, they could play anywhere on the field pretty much except goalkeeper. So I think that just from a roster construction standpoint, it's going to be difficult for a player like Andy Sullivan, who on the depth chart, I just don't think she's better than any of the other midfielders that are there.
So let me mention 2 other players who are not on the She Believes Cup roster. And for anybody listening, I will take the bullet on this. Caitlin doesn't have to. I will take the bullet because I'm bringing it up. And that's Allie Long and Morgan Bryant.
Mm, okay.
And there are some, the word is stands for the folks who don't know the common parlance of Morgan Bryant. And there are 1 or 2 of Allie Long, but there are definitely some of Morgan Bryant. And they get my Twitter mentions a lot.
I think there's account like Morgan Brian news or something.
That's I wasn't gonna say it directly.
Sorry, maybe the producer can bleep that out. But anytime I say anything about Morgan Brian, I hear from that account, and they let me know that they think I'm an idiot. But
I've been there plenty of times. What are you making the two of them?
I'll speak for myself. I was a little surprised that Morgan Brian even made the World Cup team. She has been on sort of an up and down journey for the past, I'd say, couple years, where she's dealt with some injuries. She's dealt with not having good form. She went to France and wasn't really even getting on the field. She hasn't been that consistent. So I guess I don't even think of her as sort of like a front runner for one of these spots. And so when she, you know, didn't make the She Believes Cup roster, didn't make the Olympic qualifying roster, that didn't really register as being surprising to me, but I guess it should have. I mean, she was on the World Cup team, but I think she's just a player who hasn't been that consistent. I don't know that she's someone that I would be looking to start if, you know, someone was injured or something happened. You know, Jill Ellis talked about, essentially, I think the reason that Morgan Brian was on the World Cup team is that she'd been in a World Cup before. And Jill Ellis talked a lot about that experience and kind of knowing that she could handle that pressure cooker. But if you're just looking at her performance and what she's been able to bring on the field for the last couple of years, I don't know if that alone tells me that, you know, she should be on the Olympic team. I think with Allie Long, she's always been sort of a depth piece. And again, I mean, when you look at the talent that they have, I just don't see how she makes it. You know, maybe she fights it out with Andy Sullivan for that fifth spot behind the other midfielders. But Andy Sullivan is a lot younger. She's a player that you're going to want to have on the team in the future and sort of get her that experience now. Ellie Long, I don't have her age in front of me, but I think this would be her last cycle. So, you know, I guess maybe I should have been a little more surprised when these players were sort of quickly cut from the team, but not really, because, you know, I was a little surprised. Sorry, my computer just did something. So for me, I don't really think they're factors for the Olympics, but what do you think?
I don't either. Allie Long is 32, for the record. I want to ask about one other player, and that's Emily Sonnet. And I want to put it in this context. It's a little bit similar to Pew. Sonnet wasn't left off of any rosters, to be clear, with the U.S. She's been a mainstay for a while. She can play right back. She can play center back. She was just traded to
debate.
Well,
she can. Can she do both? Well, I don't know about that, but me and Jill Ellis might have disagreements on that. But anyway, continue.
She was just traded to, in the offseason, she was traded to Orlando, mm-hmm. and was the centerpiece of a deal that sent the number one pick to Portland, it turned out to be Sophia Smith. And Sonnet, you know, she's going from one team that's got a lot of stars on it, arguably the most star-studded team in the league, in the Thorn, certainly the biggest, to Orlando, which has Alex Morgan and Marta, and Allie Krieger and Ashlyn Harris, which is plenty of star power. But it certainly seems that Sonnet's going to be a big deal in Orlando. And that's it, you know. It seems to me that she's sort of at a little bit of an inflection point right now, too, in terms of what she can be for club and country, that this is a big moment for her.
Yeah, I think the reason I think Emily Sonnet was in the picture under Jill Ellis is that, and Jill Ellis has talked about this, that she is a player who, as far as Jill Ellis was concerned, could play as a center back or as a fullback. I don't really think that she's been very effective as a fullback. And I mean, I would go so far as to say I don't think she was good as a right back. So as a center back, you know, I think she's fine. But I mean, in Portland last season, I mean, she didn't play a ton during the summer because of the World Cup, obviously. But I don't think she played very well in Portland, like the last couple seasons, I would say. She's been pretty inconsistent, a lot of mistakes. And I mean, it wasn't just Emily Sonnet. It was the entire back line, for whatever reason, was having a lot of breakdowns, a lot of individual errors, which, you know, was concerning. And Emily Sonnet, I think, can be a little bit error prone. And, you know, when I look at sort of the roster for the Olympics, she is one of the players that I have sort of on the cut list. You know, maybe a move to the Pride can rejuvenate her a bit. I think the Pride have had their own issues as far as their defense. So I sort of wonder if that's a situation that will be helpful or if it's going to be a continuation of some of the problems that she had in Portland.
All right, so that was really interesting. And I think you talk about the Thorns' defensive issues, and Mark Parsons would have torn his hair out if he had enough to tear. Certainly watching him from afar last year, I could tell how annoyed he was by it. And I think that that was one of the many reasons why that team got blown up in a lot of ways this winter. They'd made a ton of moves.
Yeah.
I want to change the shift gears a little bit here to the NWSL. And I'll say this to the listeners who might not know this. Caitlin and I have been friends for a long time. We yammer at each other constantly about all kinds of things in women's soccer, mostly by Twitter direct message that the public doesn't see it. But it's, you know, the arrival of Lisa Baird as the new commissioner in the NWSL is a huge deal. One, for her resume, which we should start with. U.S. Olympic Committee for a long time in sponsorship sales, so she knows how to go get the big money because nobody's better at it in this country than the U.S. Olympic Committee. Maybe the NFL, where, by the way, she also worked. She worked at the NFL for a while. She worked at New York Public Radio for a while and a bunch of other places. And I think about, we go back to 2 or 3 weeks ago, you and I would get lots of questions from readerships, from readers, saying, what's going on with the NWSL? And you and I would both answer, we have no idea. And now we know. And now we know in a very big way. So why don't we start with that? You know, the fact that the NWSL has finally some big-time leadership at the top, it seems, in Lisa Baird.
Yeah, I think that this was a very necessary step. You know, one of the things I reported, this wasn't public, but I reported that the NWSL had asked U.S. Soccer for essentially millions of dollars so the NWSL could be independent. And U.S. Soccer was sort of like, well, you don't have a commissioner, and the owners are constantly fighting, and that's a ton of money. So no, we're not going to give you millions of dollars. And I think the pressure was already there for the NWSL to get a commissioner. You know, fans tweeted at me constantly about the NWSL not having a commissioner. For all intents and purposes, Amanda Duffy was sort of filling that role, but I don't know that she was filling it adequately, if we're being honest. So they needed to do this. It's very hard for the NWSL to sort of move forward and try to do some of the things that people are hoping for and talking about without a commissioner. And they got someone who very clearly is going to be focused on bringing in revenue. You talked about it. Her background is in licensing, marketing, sponsorships. These are the money makers. The NWSL needs to find a path forward where they're not asking U.S. Soccer for millions of dollars. They're sort of generating their own revenue through some of these deals. So I think that's really important. I think if I have a question about her hire, and I'm curious for your reaction as well, but for me, there's another part of a commissioner, and that's the operations side. That is not her background. And that's why I wrote a column for Yahoo Sports that came out on Monday, where I talked about, you know, it's great that they hired a commissioner, but they have a lot more hiring they need to do. So if owners think they just found this great person, and I think they probably offered an enticing salary to get someone with her experience. If they think that's it and they're done with the investment, I think they're mistaken. I think there's going to need to be some logistical and operations help that Lisa Baird is going to have in the front office. I think they still need a communications director as someone who covers this league. I think they desperately need a communications director. So, you know, Lisa Baird is not going to check every single box that they have. I don't think she checks the operations box, but if she can bring in revenue, that's hugely important. And they should make sure she has the support to do the rest of the stuff that maybe is not her core competency.
I'm inclined to agree with that. And I do think that, and they would probably say this, and I probably agree, you have to bring in the money first. And she's, I mean, I've said this to a bunch of people, and you alluded to it earlier. Her number one job is to make as much money as humanly possible for this league. Mm-hmm. And she has the connect, and she has to be able to do something which she has done before, which is why I'm very encouraged about her ability to do it now. Go out into the corporate world, which is to say a lot of white men who want to watch the NFL and not maybe a little bit of baseball and in some parts of the country, college football and not much else, and get them to spend their money on women's soccer. And I want to read here a quote from Baird. She did a conference call with the media a couple days ago when she was first announced. It was her and the NWSL's resident defense attorney, Arnim Whistler, the owner of the Chicago Red Stars, who talked a lot on that conference call, let me say. I'm not the only one who's said that aloud now, so I feel a little more comfortable saying he talked a lot, probably more than some people wanted him to.
But interjected quite a bit, yeah.
Yes. So here is Lisa Baird. I asked her what I just said. How do you go out into the corporate world and in their language prove to sponsors why they should put their money into the NWSL? She said, not only do we have an incredibly great league with talented players that can be incredible spokespeople for their products and services, but we're at a time in the momentum of this league where not only the passion of the fans, but the purpose of women's sports and women's soccer is right for being a platform for companies' communications and their purpose within the landscape. And then she said later, I think they, the sponsors, some of whom had already reached out to her by that point, see what the owners and the players have done here, and I can't wait to make this a focus in my early days. This is somebody who has worked with some of the biggest consumer products corporations in the United States. It gets no bigger than Procter & Gamble's long-running sponsorship with the U.S. Olympic Committee and NBC. She said it. We've all said it. If she goes and gets the money and goes and gets the sponsors, that's when I think this thing starts to take off, and that's when they can then hopefully build out. Look, it's unfair in some ways to compare it to Major League Soccer's front office, which is enormous, but Mark Abbott does a lot of the operation stuff. Gary Stevenson does all the broadcasting and media rights stuff. And there are a couple of other people who handle player contracts and...
Yeah, I mean, MLS has 350 people in New York City. I think
still,
there's like... a handful of people in the NWSL front office. And the NWSL, with the introduction of allocation money, is creating more of a tangled web of things that teams need to go through. And they're making the league more complicated. So
I have an issue with allocation money. That is for another show, because we could spend an hour alone on Arnim Whistler admitting that you can use allocation money on your front office staff and not on your players, but that's for another show.
And there's a ton of things that they didn't even disclose to the public. We can talk about
I await your next story on that. I was just going to say that, you know, because MLS has, again, I'm not saying the NWSL's front office would be that big, but when you have the operations people eventually, which I think the NWSL will, allows Lisa Baird to go out and do what Don Garber has done, which is be everywhere at all times, be on camera, be shaking hands, be talking to sponsors, be the chief cheerleader for the, you don't have to like him. And a lot of people don't like him. But even the people who don't like him do not deny that he is very good at his number one job, which is being the number one cheerleader for Major League Soccer. And that's what Lisa Baird has to be. And I think she can be.
Yeah, Don Garber is everywhere. And when he speaks, people listen to him because he is the commissioner. He's not, I don't know, some random other staffer. Like, there is authority when he speaks. And yeah, I think that Lisa Baird, I mean, I'm hoping that they get a deputy commissioner or something like that who can sort of handle maybe a bit more of the behind the scenes stuff. I think what's notable is that Lisa Baird is not a quote unquote soccer person. And I think that's actually really important because, you know, if we look at Jeff Plush, the previous commissioner, if we look at Amanda Duffy, who was kind of sort of the commissioner after he left, these were soccer people and they were around soccer, but they hadn't demonstrated that they could do the sort of things that Lisa Baird has demonstrated that she can do. And I think that's important. They got someone who actually has a track record and knows how to get sponsors, build brands. That's what the NWSL really needs. So they need her to be out front talking about those things, making those things happen. They can get the soccer people for the behind the scenes stuff, handling the logistics and the operations. I hope that maybe they can address those things sooner rather than later, because I think last season we saw a lot of problems, teams not even knowing that they had clinched the playoffs, you know, things not being announced, the Budweiser deal, which, by the way, was not negotiated by the NWSL. U.S. Soccer and Soccer United Marketing got Budweiser to sponsor the NWSL, and then the NWSL didn't even announce it themselves. Budweiser announced it. They handled all that. It was crickets from the NWSL. So I think they need to address some of that stuff pretty quickly, because if the league looks like it doesn't know what it's doing and it's sort of dysfunctional, I don't know how enticing that would be to, you know, potential partners. So I guess it's a little bit of a chicken egg thing. They do need revenue to make some of these things happen, but I don't know if they can wait on it too much longer, to be honest.
Well, this has been terrific. And if Caitlin and I keep talking, we will go on for the rest of the day because we're very easily capable of doing it. Caitlin, thank you so much for coming on the show. I wish that your many various employers would have sent you out this way for the weekend, but we'll have to suffice with talking via Skype, and I'll see you along the way in Portland somewhere.
Okay, bring hand sanitizer with you.
Yeah, really. This is that's speaking of a whole other show. My goodness. We will try.
I wrote an article about the coronavirus for Yahoo. So if anyone has concerns for the She Believes Cup, I guess they can read about that. But I'll just say bring hand sanitizer.
We will try to not incite mass panic among the listenership if we can. Just
no panic, just common sense. You know, cover your mouth when you cough, people. The coronavirus is here in Portland. It's where you are as well. So, you know, just be mindful. That's all I'll say.
And on that terrific note, we will wrap the show up. For Caitlin Murray, for Kieran Tavem, for our producer, Kevin Laramie, I'm Jonathan Tannenwald, and thanks for listening to this episode of the Women's Soccer Review on the Sports Podcasting Network.